Spin where the mayor, every time violence happens, and they're like, oh, see, this is why we didn't defund. We didn't defund. We still have the largest police force in the country, and they are unable to control the violence that is emerging in my community of Bed-Stuy. So I want a different intervention. I want an intervention that works.
Muneefa Bhandeli, I want to thank you for being with us. It's on the Steering Committee for Communities United for Police Reform and the Policy Table Leadership Team for the Movement for Black Lives. Happy birthday, Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. That means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. As good a time as any. Want to start? Yeah. Okay. It's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here, and Kyle's over there.
Of course. If you can hear me.
No, I hear you fine. Just making some adjustments here.
Okay.
Don't want the music to be too loud. But you don't want
That's
it to be too low.
I'm happy
low
to be
either.
Here. No, I'm happy to be here. I can be loud.
Well, you usually are, but sometimes. Sometimes the music gets loud. Okay, let's just put Philip Glass down a little bit. That's better. Yeah. Hey, Kyle, why'd you give me this hard candy right before we went on the air? It's clicking around inside my teeth now. It's hard for me to enunciate.
I thought, oh, wow, so you actually accepted my offer.
Well, you kind of made it so I had to get it out of the way somehow.
I'm sorry about that.
Is a Zots? What is a Zots? I've never had this before.
It's a candy from the 90s.
It kind of like fizzes. Like there's some kind of chemical thing going on that I don't understand.
You realize a lot of the candy comes from Connecticut? I don't know why.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of candy made in Connecticut.
Really?
Is it a thing? Do you know anything about this?
This is educational radio. This is why you learn things every day.
Is that like the base of Big Sugar?
I didn't know this. I figured if it came from anywhere, it would be New Jersey. But that's probably where just the artificial flavor comes from.
Okay.
I don't know what Connecticut does. I really don't.
Well, anyway, I think I was going to make up some... I'm getting ready, actually, for Halloween. And if anybody has young people...
Wait a minute. Wait. Hold on a second.
They know they have to start early. You gotta
Full
get in early.
Stop.
What?
It's May. What do you mean you're getting ready for Halloween?
I don't know about you, but have you seen the supply chain issues lately?
Hold on. Is this some kind of post-pandemic thing? Because, you know, if people had listened to me, Thanksgiving would be on Thursday. Okay? That was my plan. And, yeah, it doesn't seem so bad now, does it? But, no, nobody listens to me back in November. Yeah, when nobody could have Thanksgiving. I said, just postpone it 6 months and have it on the 27th. And guess what you get? You get a kick-ass weekend because Memorial Day follows. Did any of you do this? No, none of you did. I don't see any turkeys in the shopping centers. I don't see people planning all kinds of family festivities. No. Just another Memorial Day weekend coming up where you don't have as much of a pandemic and we could have all gotten together and had a double holiday. Yeah. Okay, but no, you're planning Halloween for a separate reason.
Well, yeah, and I'd just been thinking about this. It was just a funny candy, and I wondered if it was still around. It turns out it is. So I got a bunch of it.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I wonder if things are still around. Like, I wonder, is Fudgetown still around? Fudge, it's not a place. It's a cookie. It was made by Burry's. Is Burry's still around? I don't have time to look into all these things. I just want to know. Are they still around? The other thing that I wonder is it still around is the coconut ice cream pop from Good Humor. I swear I grew up and had the Good Humor truck would bring these by, and it was white. It was all coconut on the outside, and it was a good candy bar, but I don't see it anywhere anymore. So what happened to it? You know, people like coconut. People like ice cream. How could it not survive? And I'm sure there are other things, too, that I keep remembering. Like, you know, we talked about Wheatina a few months ago, and people wrote in and said, yeah, it still exists. I can't find it anywhere. Apparently, it's only in a few supermarkets. So Wheatina, that and oatmeal were the two non-crispy breakfast cereals that I grew up with.
I'm interested in trying these, trying new things like that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So definitely if we find those,
There was something called Shake a Pudding when I was a kid. It's called Shake a Pudding. It had a song and everything where you did something and you shook it and you had pudding when you finished. So I don't think that's still around.
We've already done the Pop Rocks show.
Uh-huh. Scooter Pies. Is Scooter Pies still around? Anybody know? No? No, no one knows what I'm talking about. I feel like I have dementia. I'm just making up words. No, Scooter Pie was a thing. It really was. I didn't actually have very many of them. I was deprived of Scooter Pies for some reason. There was a line my mother drew. And certain things, like
marshmallow,
like Cool Whip, for instance.
Okay. No, I didn't have Cool Whip.
We didn't have Cool Whip in our house. Uh-uh. That was too much. That was over the line. And I'm glad. I am grateful that that line existed because, boy, there was a lot of crap out there that kids were ingesting. And maybe that's why I never heard of Zots. But you said this is from the 90s?
Well... What's interesting, I don't know, it's probably older. I don't know the whole provenance of this particular candy, but I do know that it's actually manufactured in Italy. And it's made with this hard candy press or some kind of machine. But anyway, the filling, like the inside, is fizzy.
Yeah. What is that? What's going on there?
It kind of like foams up. And I swear I had one of these one time that had like double fizziness. And I had it, I was like, you know, I wasn't, you know, biting, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't cracking it open. So it kind of like, it was getting, you know, worn down because it's a hard candy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just like burst with all this fizziness. And I don't know if it was like super engineered
or
it was like
injured by this at all. Or?
Manufacturing accident, but I loved it.
You could file a lawsuit though. You know, if you
was, I would, no, I was a kid. I was all into
it. Yeah, if you
it.
Were
I
a savvy like, kid, you could have made out. You
I was
know?
Like, give me another. I was, this was like the magical, the one, you know, the golden ticket or something. Anyway, no, it's just, it's a funny candy I wanted, and I wanted to share it with some young people. So,
well, you know, I didn't get any bizarre. I remember, which is the one that has the nut, Almond Joy or Mounds? Well, I mean, it's in the name. I'm sorry. Almond, obviously. Okay, so Almond Joy probably had the almond in it. But once I got an Almond Joy that had two almonds in it.
See?
That was one of the highlights of my childhood. And I don't regret that. That was a good day. Nobody believed me. Well, I wasn't going to hold on to it.
The other thing is sometimes we're on long trips. You know, it's nice to have a little bit of a hard candy or something. Or actually just, you know... Running around, all the kinds of busy things we end up doing the radio, setting up here. It's
we went to New York City.
That
we went to New York City. That was not something.
It was something. You know what else?
First time in well over half a year, and almost a year, we went to New York City just to see how it's doing. You know, and to cautiously tread around. And I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed with the way people are. Everyone was like. Cautious, happy, looking out for each other. Didn't see any idiots.
Cautiously happy.
Cautiously happy. Cautiously happy. That's my life. Yeah. I was happy walking around. And we did a lot of walking around. Boy.
Well, you realize how much ordinarily you would have been doing a lot of walking around. This is just basically getting back into that a little bit. And it was a thrill. Uh-huh. Really fun. Uh-huh. Really fun to see things that have been built. Since the last time we remember walking around like that, and so many people out just trekking, you know, trying to make their way out of doors and have some kind of fun over the weekend with all this spring and soon to be summer weather, and just taking it in, experiencing the city, trying to bring things back. That's what it takes, is people taking an interest. And we went all over. We did see some very interesting new things. We went to the Little Island.
Little Island, yeah.
Little Island.
Couldn't get into Little Island because there were too many people on it, apparently. And it's a floating island, and I guess they're worried it's going to sink if too many people get on it.
Yes, and you have to place advanced reservations if you're interested in visiting the Little Island. They have an entire system.
Is that what you're doing now? You're making a reservation to go to an island?
Oh, no. I'm following up on some recycling things I'm trying to do with the state.
What I don't get is, you know, they could be a little bit more clear because you go to this play. I just, you know, knew it was there. It's on the west end of 14th Street. It's in the Hudson River. And, you know, there are a bunch of people, and I walked up to a gate, and the guy there just, like, waves. Like, okay, what are you waving? It's waving down, like, go that way, or just keep going. So I kept going, and there was another gate, and that's the gate where the person tells you that they can't let anybody in. Why couldn't that person have said that? But there is a QR code that you basically read on your phone. And that tells you, hey, you're at Little Island, and here's how to make a reservation. Click here to make a reservation. Click the time you want to go. Sorry, we can't make a reservation for this time or for the rest of the day or for the rest of the week. Could have said that at the beginning, too, instead of all the clicking, but I guess they just have a way of doing things. But it was cool standing there, looking at it from a distance and seeing all the people who couldn't get in.
Well, opening up this new feature, that is the priority, not fussing around with some, what is this, fiddly software you speak
of. I don't understand like why we have to make reservations to go to a park. You know, if a park gets crowded, then people leave because it's unpleasant.
Well, it's a new venue, and there is a swell of people that are very interested because there's a fair amount of press that this new space is getting. Eventually, it'll have a low roar of people visiting. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Maybe they'll always have some kind of ticketed system if it stays as active as it was. Because there were throngs of people, really a huge turnout just to see what's going on, and passersby and all sorts of interest.
Yes,
as well as all the people exercising and doing their thing out of doors along that section of the river.
Yeah, the west side. We don't usually go over there, but I was impressed by all the new architecture coming up, all kinds of strange-looking buildings. There was one with, I don't know where it is exactly, but there was one with this massive deck way up high where that looked like a lot of people were on. And it looks like it's designed for a lot of people. It's kind of like an observation deck. But I have no idea what that is. It just shocked me. I felt like I was in a different city. And it was kind of neat to see such, I almost want to say European-style architecture, because that's the kind of thing that we notice when we travel and say, why can't we have this in New York? And now we do. So that was cool to see.
Yeah, it felt like Portugal or Czech Republic or something wild. Something with some sort of contrasting new and old architecture.
One of those wild places, yes.
Architecturally, I mean.
Architecturally wild. Or German, you know. Germany has some really cool architecture in various places. And we like to see different things tried. Walked over to Moynihan Station, the new train station, which, you know, I got to say, I was walking around in there and I said, yeah, this is right. There's the train hall. You're following these signs for the train hall, just like in Europe where you see a sign for the train hall. And when you get there, yeah, it's a train hall. Massive high ceilings and just a lot of space. Only trouble is it's a block west of Penn Station. And I'm just wondering, how are people going to go there instead of Penn Station when you can get to the same trains in Penn Station that are accessible in Moynihan? Or are people going to go over to 9th Avenue and 10th Avenue to do this? I hope they do, but it seemed kind of empty. Of course, we were there on a Sunday night, I think, so maybe that's why it was empty. I'd like to see it bustling with a lot of people. I also would like to see Penn Station rebuilt like they want to do. They want to kind of return it to its glory days before they destroyed it in the early 60s. And then you would have a double train hall, which certainly is something that New York deserves. So moving on the right track, to coin a phrase, getting there.
And quickly.
Very quickly. And you know, there are a bunch of things that are happening in the railway world, around us anyway. They are restoring long-distance trains on Amtrak. It's a hopeful sign the travel industry is bouncing back after the pandemic-induced lows of last year. Amtrak says it will restore daily service on 12 long-distance routes across the country. Monday, four of them, concentrated in the Midwest and West Coast, resume daily service. They are the California Zephyr, goes from Chicago to San Francisco, the Coast Starlight from Seattle to Los Angeles, the Empire Builder from Chicago to Portland/Seattle, and the Texas Eagle from Chicago to Los Angeles. Those four routes had previously only been operating several times a week due to low ridership during the pandemic. On May 31st, Capital Limited from Washington, D.C. to Chicago, City of New Orleans from Chicago to New Orleans, Lakeshore Limited from New York to Chicago, and Southwest Chief from Chicago to Los Angeles will be resuming daily service. And on June 7th, the Crescent that goes from New York to New Orleans, the Palmetto, I don't know this one, from New York to Savannah, Silver Meteor from New York to Miami, and the Silver Star also from New York to Miami, they will go back to daily service. Now, that means 1,200 furloughed employees will get their jobs back. And got to tell you, Amtrak people are the best people in the world. So I'm glad to hear they're getting their jobs back.
Yeah, that's great news. Then they are. They'll definitely take care of you, and it's good to hear that they're going to be brought back into the workforce there.
Senator Maria Cantwell.
Oh, I know her.
You know her. Good. She's a Democrat from Washington State. She helped secure billions in COVID relief funding for Amtrak as chair of the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. And she hailed the news. For 50 years, Amtrak has been connecting us to our destinations. We need to restore services cut during the pandemic. And we look forward to another 50 years of Amtrak. Well, I look forward to another 50 years of Amtrak, too. But, you know, a better Amtrak, a faster Amtrak, an Amtrak that is much more accessible to many more people. I hope they do the connection through Long Island. That would be nice. I'm usually against massive projects that involve building things because it usually involves destroying habitats and making things ugly. But I don't see it happening in this case. If you have a high-speed rail that uses existing track and then goes under the Sound and doesn't have a whole lot of doesn't have any automobile traffic going with it, making Long Island kind of just a place you pass through on the way from New York to Boston. No, it's not going to be that. I see this as a way of getting places faster without using planes, and I think that is a good thing. Now, Amtrak is also pushing an expansion, major expansion in Ohio, which I think is fantastic. Amtrak President Stephen Gardner said last week, new passenger rail service linking Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati could begin as soon as a couple of years with support from Congress. His comments were the most specific commitment to date from Amtrak, which earlier this year proposed a major expansion of service throughout the United States, including several new routes in Ohio. And you might have heard 2035 as a target date for that to be finished. But he's saying a couple of years we could actually, by being creative, using existing track and not having 100% of it done immediately, but having the basics down, that is great. And that's what I think will inspire people to do more. Now, he declined to give a firmer start date, saying Amtrak would have to negotiate with host railroads to use existing track. What that means is freight lines. Freight lines have priority. So it's a shame, but they do, because so much is delivered via freight in this country by rail. And you want to ask, well, if it makes so much sense for freight, why doesn't it make sense for passengers? And the answer is it does. It's just we haven't given priority to that. In other countries, passengers have priority over freight. It works a little differently.
Or dedicated lines.
Yeah, you know, there's so much track there. It's not like you have to build new track, although, you know, to go faster, you do have to build a different kind of infrastructure. But if we're able to do it for freight, we're able to do it for passengers. It's just no question about that. Anyway, he said, we believe we could start initial service, maybe one round trip or a few, without much initial treatment, using current track speeds. We believe we could get started here in hopefully what would be a relatively short period of a couple of years. You know, I like to hear people talk like that, not say, well, yeah, we can do this, but it'll take, you know, a lifetime to finish, and it's very doubtful. That's how most people are trained to speak, but to be optimistic and creative, that's how you make dreams come true. So Gardner, along with Amtrak CEO Bill Flynn, hosted a roundtable discussion with members of the Ohio media in an effort to drum up support for the so-called 3C plus D route. You know why it's called 3C plus D, right?
No.
Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Dayton. Clever, huh?
That is
Ohio
nice.
People are clever. 3C plus D. Linking Ohio's three largest cities and Dayton.
That's 250-mile
route.
That's awesome that they need it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Welcome to here.
This corridor length is the sweet spot for successful intercity passenger rail service in the United States. This service is the type of service we should have for major cities and for an important state like Ohio. And, you know, they almost did this before. 11 years ago, under former Governor Ted Strickland, the state received $400 million in federal funding to launch the route from the Obama administration. And newly elected Governor John Kasich, the guy that we all say, yeah, he's a moderate, he's reasonable. He gave the money back, said, no, we don't want a train. We don't want rail service. Yeah, so that's what he did. What's different now is that Amtrak says it'll fund the startup costs of the new service, as well as operational support for the first 5 years. But first, Amtrak needs support from Congress. The rail agency recently submitted its reauthorization request to Congress, which includes funding for new corridor development. In addition, Congress continues to debate the merits of President Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure bill, which includes $80 billion for Amtrak. In addition to stops in Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati, these trains would stop at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, Crestline, Delaware, which apparently is in Ohio, Springfield, and Sharonville. Service would likely debut at three round trips per day with the expectation of adding more frequency as demand grows. Travel time between Cleveland and Cincinnati would likely start at about 5.5 hours, reducing to 4 hours and 55 minutes as track improvements are made, which seems long. But again, if you're not driving, you're not flying, and you're pretty much relaxing, It's not bad. It's not bad, and they can make it faster.
And amenities like wireless and power, like the modern cars, of course, are built for people who would be otherwise able to telecommute in other settings.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're just left to your without your devices.
So in addition to the new 3C plus D route, Amtrak has also proposed making Cleveland and Cincinnati mini hubs with more service to Detroit, New York City, and Chicago. It just makes so much sense. And, you know, it ties into all of the things that the Biden administration is investing in, you know, fixing our country, things we've been railing about for many years. And to actually get it done is really what makes a difference as to the future of this country.
And the element of inspiring the public, the feeling we get when we were in the train hall taking in this space, that it means something. It's a welcome mat, I think, in a lot of ways for the city. Those moments, that architecture, those the utility of it, and the function it provides and that value to the community and the country is, I think, so overlooked, so incredibly overlooked in comparison to some of our priorities in the past decades, or at least as long as I've been paying attention.
Well, let's just hope it gets done. If Republicans won't cooperate because it's a Democrat idea, then we have to figure out a way to do it without them. It's just, you know, otherwise, what's the point of any of this? You know, we have to make changes. We have to actually try something different. We tried it their way. It doesn't work. And it creates all kinds of problems. What's incredible to me is that this $2 trillion initial proposal was paid for, and not by a tax increase. So, you know, it's a question of how you say certain things. You know, if you watch Fox, they will say that Biden wants to increase taxes. Yeah, wants to increase taxes on corporations and the extremely wealthy. All right. But if you just hear the headline, that makes it sound like he's increasing your taxes. And odds are, if you're listening to us, you're not either a corporation or a multi-billionaire. So by basically targeting those places, those people who can't afford it, and corporations can, because the corporate tax rate was even higher than what it's proposed to be. So it's not even an increase. And certainly multi-billionaires can afford to pay a little more. That means that there's no tax increase, and that Republicans are pushing a tax increase on people who make less, because otherwise, how do you pay for any of this? And by having their 2017 tax bill that they don't want revisited, they don't want it to be tweaked in any way, and all that money went to the wealthiest people, had no effect on anyone else, did not trickle down to the rest of the people. You see where their priorities are. Their priorities are to protect those wealthy people at all costs. Don't touch them. And if it means a crumbling infrastructure, so be it. They don't use it anyway, so it's disgusting. And the sooner Democrats get serious and say, okay, you know, we tried, and you guys just don't want to participate, then don't. And figure out a way to do it. That is key, because, you know, if they don't figure this out, even if it's their, even if it's not their fault, they'll still take the blame in 2022, because people will see nothing happening, nothing changing, and they'll blame Democrats. They'll say they couldn't do it, despite the fact that they were blocked at every turn. Not surprised, but they have to figure out how to get past that. All right. We also looked at Eurovision for the first time. That was cool.
Well, it felt like a telethon at first, but when the cross between like a football tournament and a telethon of sorts. Uh-huh. But no finance, you know, they weren't giving out numbers, of course.
No, it was awesome. It was like an award show, but no commercials. My God, no commercials at all for like 5 hours. That was amazing.
they did sort of have these moments towards the end where you're really hanging off your seat over every word. I was getting that at that point. I was like, this is ridiculous. Just say it. Say who won.
Well, they have, like everything in Europe, they have a weird voting system, and I still can't figure it out. And I see now why, you know, all the football teams are, you know, placed in this very complex structure and different leagues and competitions. It's the same thing here. You basically have, I think it was 39 countries originally, and then it was reduced to 26 for the final competition, which took place on Saturday.
But they give points to each other.
What happens is, well, first of all, there are videos, and you can see these videos too. Let's look up Eurovision 2021. In fact, I'm gonna play a little bit of the French entry, which I thought was really nice.
Public votes, and then each.
That's French.
Moi la chanteuse à demi, parlez de moi à vos amours, à vos amis.
Barbara Pravi, I believe is her name. This is one complaint I have. They don't say the names of the people who actually make the music all that much. They basically say, okay, here's France, here's Belgium, and it's kind of like, you know, a team, which I get, but really these are the people singing their hearts out. Listen to this.
Me voilà même si, mise à nu j'ai peur, oui. Me voilà dans le bruit et dans le silence. Regardez-moi.
That means look at me. Amazing. It's just amazing. There's such variety in the music that you're just transfixed. So everyone makes about a 3-minute video, which you can look at, and then they perform the songs live at the actual competition. Now, what do I call them? Musicians, teams, players?
Mega groups.
Yeah, some of them weren't able to make it, so they had to figure out some other way to do it, either through a rehearsal video or by doing something remotely. And you know, I didn't know any of these songs on Saturday when we first started looking, and I think I know all of them now.
But you know, I've heard bits and pieces of them throughout the year, but you know.
I'm sorry.
You would hear them all over radio if you were traveling.
Well, you know, it kind of, what it did for me was make me realize that there are still a lot of songs out there that are kind of old school, like catchy 3-minute songs. You sort of think that era is gone, that everything is more complex and targeted. And so many of these songs are just fun. And, you know, poppy and catchy, but different in so many ways. Let me just play the song that I think, well, one of the songs I think should have won. From Finland. A slightly different style, but really, really catchy.
Stop. I,
And that's Blind Channel is the name of the group with Dark Side from Finland. That was the entry for Eurovision this year. I think that was a damn good song. Very catchy. I've got it in my head. I can't get it out. Another hard rock group won from Italy. So rock and roll is not dead. I think they said that, in fact, when they won. So, but it's really worth looking into. I can't figure out the scoring system because you have a jury from a lot of different countries. And for some reason, Israel is included, even though they're not in Europe. And Australia is included, even though they're really not in Europe. So countries can, they have, I think, professional juries where they basically allocate 12 votes for a country other than their own. And sometimes you see alliances forming, like Moldova voting for Russia and Russia voting for Moldova and things like that. But many times it's based on their preferences, and the country gets 12 points. But you see other numbers on the screen that aren't accounted for. It's very complicated. Apparently other votes are coming in. You can vote for a first place team. They get 12. Second place gets 10. I don't know why they skip 11. They skip 9. Then they go 8, 7, 6, all the way down to 1. So that's going on. And then they tabulate all the viewers in both Europe and Australia. And no, we can't vote here in the United States, apparently, unless we figure out some way to hack the system. And then they basically have the same type of system. And what's weird is there are situations where a country such as the United Kingdom can get no votes. And that's exactly what happened. They got zero, both from the professional jury and from the viewers. Very embarrassing. And of course, everybody cheered the UK, you know, just for trying and out of sympathy, I guess. But then what they do is, like you were saying, Kyle, they make it so you're gripped watching. They start at the lowest ranked, and then they add in the viewers, and then they jump up or move a little bit based on those new numbers. And when it comes down to the last few, you don't know who's going to win until literally the very last one is announced.
And they start doing the split screen. You're sitting there watching four different performers as they react to the points coming in.
It's really interesting. It's really something so different. And just the fact that it's a five-hour award show with performances and no commercials tells me why it's not popular here, because we're not used to things like that. But boy, it was cool to see that. And for the first time, it was on a streaming service. Peacock carried it, and I was able to discover that. I think if that was publicized more, I think more people would have gotten into it. But yeah, you can hear all the songs. Go to YouTube and just look for Eurovision 2021. You can see all 39. And we're going to play one as our outro. See if you can guess which one.
No.
Not you. But yeah, it's a bit of fun. It was a fun way to spend several hours. You actually made them stop?
Nah, you can't. You gotta start. Just let me. Don't you see? Hold the top. Hold the top. Okay, and now, let me just.
Is there a reason you stopped this?
Nah, I just had to tighten that. Okay, go ahead.
Really? We don't get those 30 seconds back, you know.
Look, I don't want to run something that's going to malfunction.
It's
boss.
Time for Films of the Year that was here on WUSB on Off the Wall, where we go back in time and, well, you know what we do. Let's just get into it so we can get back that time. We're up to 1999. We saw two films. The first film was the American film, American Beauty. What do you think about that?
It was not as good as I remembered it. I think I saw it at a juncture in my upbringing where, you know, everything seems awesome. And I thought it was, you know, going to be more artistic than it was in retrospect. At the time, it was really kind of a crazy film. And I seem to remember, there were so many aspects of it that are really messed up.
It's about Kevin Spacey pursuing an underage sexual conquest. What could go wrong?
Right. I mean, it's just, it's a very sarcastic take. I mean, American Beauty is not, what it shows is just this, like, blissful, weird permutations of people's individual lives and how they kind of interrupt and bump into each other in these, as in their eccentricities. And I, you know, it's a very messed up movie. And I guess, as a young person, that's like, oh, cool, awesome. You know, that's, you know, or that's a sarcastic, you know, that's a very dark, countercultural take on American successes, you know, because these people are living their lives, but they're not happy. They're upset. You know?
No, nobody's happy. Nobody's really happy. You got Kevin Spacey. He's the advertising executive who is unhappy in his life and in his marriage and pretty much everything. His wife, the realtor, who's unhappy, unfulfilled, and materialistic. Their daughter, embarrassed by both of them, not particularly happy. The weird next-door neighbors who move in. The military guy who just believes in discipline and introduces himself as a member of the Marine Corps. His catatonic wife, who I think is the most interesting character because they never explain why she's catatonic. She just basically is living like a ghost. And then you have their weird-ass son who's taking videos of the girl next door and was in a mental institution for a little while. And then, of course, you have the model girl, the friend of the daughter of Kevin Spacey, who Kevin Spacey is enthralled with. She's just basically materialistic and into looks.
Angela is her name.
Angela. Yeah, I don't know anybody's name.
The forbidden, temptation for our protagonist. And of course, there's other things going on. This military guy has some sort of like homoerotic interaction with Kevin Spacey, who's like working out as he does an about face in his own life, starts smoking weed and working out and telling his wife off and all this kind of stuff. And with this fantasy in the back of his mind, all basically that started from like what watching it, seeing Angela at a the school basketball game. That's what happens.
As a cheerleader, yes.
Yeah, he quits his job, just acts out, blackmails his boss to get a good severance, and then starts working in a fast food restaurant. And there's these sort of funny, wry moments that Kevin Spacey delivers very in his signature way. Mm-hmm. And that is part of that. Maybe we call the movie American Sarcasm, but that's that just that knowing smile. And it's a sinister thing. It's a very twisted place that he gets to, that the character gets to. And so he actually catches his wife philandering with this other realtor as she pulls up at the drive-thru in one scene.
Well, you know, I was happy because it wasn't a period piece. And we're at 1999 now. And I think throughout the 90s, the only other non-period pieces that we've seen that won Best Picture of the Year were Silence of the Lambs and Forrest Gump. So it was kind of cool to get back into suburbia and get away from Shakespeare and the Titanic and all that. But I wish there was more to this. Interesting characters. I'll give the film that. I just didn't buy where everybody wound up at the end. At the end, it was like there were two different people on their way to kill Kevin Spacey. And that's before they knew the truth about Kevin Spacey. So it didn't really sell it to me.
And that's the cliffhanger.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
People were making decisions, but you didn't know why they were making these decisions. It kind of didn't make a whole lot of sense. It just seemed like it kind of took the absurdity route whenever it could.
And then he floats off in this surreal...
Well, he explains life after death, which is kind of presumptuous for any film. But thank you, Kevin. Thank you for that. Now I know what lies beyond. It was all right. It was okay.
Again, with the sorry... I mean, that's a really... just sarcastic way to put it, or sardonic outro of just, you know, well, there's beauty in the world, so
yeah, but okay. Only American beauty. apparently.
And somehow you won.
I keep mixing it up with American Pie. I thought it was that film, and
I was not
disappointed. But it was out about the same time too, and a couple of the same people were in it. That's kind of interesting. Anyway, so let's go to the international film. What did we have?
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm changing modes. All About My Mother.
All About My Mother, a Spanish film.
Todo Sobre Mi Madre.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was good. I liked it. I wasn't expecting the direction it went in. It pretty much was a very enlightened film about the trans community and empowerment, I guess.
Taking care of each other.
Exactly. Support.
Need.
You don't know where, this is what I love about European films. You don't know where they're going to go. You know, we're watching this film for 20 minutes. It's about the relationship between a mother and her son. And then the next 20 minutes, it's about something completely different because the film just goes in a totally different direction. And then you're meeting all these other people and learning all this other history.
It does kind of set you up. You think you have your bearings because there's some like classical foreshadowing that does actually pay off mm-hmm. in the viewer's mind. So you kind of think you're on track, but it really does reach depths of complication in life as there is, to the point where I was really uncertain who was whom, and I think it gets so confusing, and you become so interested in the people's stories that even you stop trying to figure out gender and who is trans or was an ex-husband.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter.
And I think that it breaks that incredibly well
mm-hmm.
because I caught myself trying just that. And ultimately, I was like, I'm so confused. You really can only lean on the story and what the dialogue is directing you to. And by the way, it's in Spanish. I mean, I'm not a native Spanish speaker. I wish I knew more. I'm always learning languages, but you got to read. And in trying to figure out the dynamics and figure out relationships from visual cues, I got a little bit fatigued from reading so much, but you had to because there's where the dialogue is, and you need that so much to figure out, okay, that's why their dynamic, that's why they feel, you know, whatever the scenario was. So that was something I was working on throughout the film.
Well, to give you an idea of just where this film went, basically a lot of it has to do with a woman trying to track down her her former husband, who is now known as Lola, but had been known as Esteban in the past. And when she finally meets up with Lola, Lola has caused a lot of damage in a lot of relationships. And you see this throughout the film. And the first thing she says to Lola is, "You are not a human being, Lola. You are an epidemic." And it's gems like that you see throughout this film. And one of the best lines that I could find was a character saying, "It costs a lot to be authentic. One can't be stingy with these things because you are more authentic the more you resemble what you've dreamed of being." And yeah, that's it. That sums it up to me. I thought it was also a really interesting scene too, when the character of Manuela, the protagonist, basically, she's telling her former husband, now known as Lola, that she named her son, now deceased, Esteban, after him. And that this other son that was born to a different woman that the former Esteban had an affair with is also named Esteban. And Lola was really moved by that, really moved by having two sons named after his former name. So I thought that was really interesting to see that reaction. And here's another just bit of dialogue. This is between a nun, a pregnant nun, and another woman who is basically considering going to El Salvador with her. And this is in the height of the troubles there. "I doubt there are many drag queens in El Salvador, but they're in the middle of a war. Yeah, I didn't know that. I'm replacing some nuns who were murdered. I'm not sure what I need right now is a war. That's pretty much the film. Characters trying to figure it all out. And in a bizarre world, their bizarre lives, all of it just dancing amongst itself. And it's unlike anything that you would see in this country. And that's why, you know, I really like seeing some of these foreign films.
Truly was just a bizarre look, and tying in the drugs and of course the AIDS crisis that was so fresh, I think it was an interesting take and brought in a little bit of time a place in history.
Definitely worth seeing. All About My Mother from Spain, 1999. And that's it for the 1900s. Imagine that. We'll be in 2000.
21st century.
Well, again, I was avoiding that, Kyle. 2000 is not the 21st century. It's still part of the 20th century. But it's not part of the 1900s.
I don't think we have enough time for
this.
We
don't have enough time for this.
We can get back.
Okay, you know, it's the anniversary of the George Floyd murder. So hopefully people will be doing some examination of if we've made any progress. Haven't made nearly enough. It's crazy, you know. It's also the anniversary of the Tulsa massacre, which took place, what was it, 100 years ago as of the beginning of June. And that's where white rioters raised the heart of Tulsa's thriving black community. But, you know, now what's happening is, and this is happening throughout the country. In fact, we even saw some of it in Smithtown with the latest school board election. Educators are being put under incredible pressure if they're teaching courses that touch upon racism, because it might make kids feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or psychological distress due to their race or gender. And this is something that Republicans are latching onto, basically saying that this idea of critical race theory is harmful. And basically, if you teach that white people have oppressed black people in the past, you're somehow teaching white kids that they're worth less than anyone else, which it's not the case at all. If you study critical race theory, and I'm not saying people don't get it wrong, that people don't say things that don't mesh with the curriculum, but if you look at what critical race theory is actually about, it's not about that at all. It's about teaching history. And what they are doing now in places like Texas and Oklahoma is banning it, saying that, no, you can't teach this anymore. Basically saying you can't teach about racism, because how do you teach about racism without talking about white and black? You know, it's not possible. We're looking at really scary times ahead where, you know, despite the changes that took place on the federal level, there were no changes on the local levels. In fact, things are getting worse. And you have states like Texas now where pretty much they're handing out guns at the motor vehicle department to anybody that wants one. You know, no permit, no training, just take a gun. It's disgusting what's happening. Closing down abortion clinics and making it impossible to get abortions now. In many states, we are moving really, really backwards. So no, I don't think we're making progress. I think we're going the other way, and it's up to us to do something about it. It's up to us to speak up and to make changes on the local level, because that is where the real power is. And that's why these states are getting away with murder. And in many cases, they are getting away with murder. It's disgusting. So rather than throw up our hands in despair and act with feigned indignation every time this happens, let's get empowered. Let's stand up, do something about it. Hey, they're handing out guns in Texas, so we can hold one of those too and say, my voice counts as much as this redneck next to me. That's what we have to do. Then let's do it. Let's get the dialogue started. Let's get the changes begun. And stop being victims, you know, because the other side is certainly not going to yield. They're not going to play fairly. They've made that perfectly clear. They don't want to investigate January 6th. Think about that. Think about that. The Capitol building was overrun with people who were determined to cause violence, to overthrow an election. And they don't want to investigate it. Our own Lee Zeldin, our representative, does not want to investigate it. Why? Why do you think? They don't want the facts to come out because the facts make them look bad. Now, you know, this isn't like Benghazi. Remember Benghazi? How many hearings were there on Benghazi? The Republicans demanded hearings on Benghazi. The Republicans demanded to be in control. Well, you know, at first, the Democrats wanted to be in control of an investigation to January 6th. And then they yielded like they usually do, but in fairness, I think it was the right thing to do. They said, okay, you know what? Five Republicans, five Democrats, bipartisan. No, Republicans don't want that either. They don't want a bipartisan investigation. That's how bad it is for them. That even if they have the same amount of people, they don't want to talk about it. We can't let them get away with this. And obviously, an investigation can happen without their participation, and it needs to happen. And we need to have at least as many hearings as Benghazi had, because this is so much worse.
Yeah, an investigation also means that a lot of the documents, a lot of the evidentiary stuff would become something that they could subpoena, that would be looked at a lot more than it would be if they get the outcome they're rooting for in this situation. So I think the pressure needs to stay on. I hate that you had to spring at us with this at such a late hour for us on Off the Wall. Mm-hmm. I would love to get into this, but there is no shortage of work to do if this term and if this future is to really be for the people.
I think it's clear. We have to maintain a positive attitude in the face of all this negativity. We have to know that we've got power to do things. We've got to unite. We can't be attacking each other. We're going to have differences. We're going to have things that we don't agree with, or attitudes, or even personalities that we don't like. We've got to put that aside. We've got to unite against what is bad, what is truly bad. And that is how we win. There's no other way. And that has to start now. That has to start now. We have to make changes on every local level that we can find. And then we'll really start moving in a positive direction. We've seen so many positive things in the last few months, and so many threats to basically thwart every single one of them. And we can never accept that. So don't give up. Know your voice counts.
Yeah, I mean, things are reopening. Society's reopening in many ways. Our government needs to reopen and function. Remember that.
Our mouths need to reopen in opposition to all the garbage going on.
If we're to come back from this, we're going to need all of that stuff to function.
I wish we had more time, but that's it for tonight. Write to us, otw@2600.com. And as promised, we're going out with a Eurovision song, and this is one of my favorites. It comes from Ukraine. If I read this correctly, I believe the band is called Go A.
Is this the one where they're talking about sowing all the hemp?
I think so. I think so. Watch the video. It was taped in sorry. Yeah, I think it was taped in Chernobyl.
They seem like a lot of fun.
Yeah, they seem like a lot of fun. Next time we're in Ukraine, we got to hang out with them.
I would love to. Yeah.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Hitchcock, bro.